miraculous, if you can think of more or less miraculous, when you're feeding thousands of people on just a tiny little bit of food.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Good morning. Well, in the passage that Gary read for us this morning, we came to the feeding of the 4,000, and it may seem, you know what, it hadn't been that long. We just saw this done, and that's so. We talked in the Gospel of Mark how Jesus fed the 5,000, and this is like that, but different numbers, a different number of people, different number of loaves, and a different number of leftovers. 12 baskets in the first account, 7 baskets in this account. The Matthew and Mark both include both instances, so you know that it isn't a confusion. The two different things happened. The baskets in this feeding of the 4,000, there's a different word. And some of your versions will say very large baskets or something like that, but it's a different kind of basket than mentioned over in the feeding of the 5,000. And the 7 baskets of leftovers collected here would actually be more than the 12 baskets of leftovers collected earlier. So in that sense, maybe Jesus did even a little bit more miraculous, if you can think of more or less miraculous, when you're feeding thousands of people on just a tiny little bit of food. But for the second time, Jesus does this thing. And immediately afterwards, the Pharisees come to him and they say, "We want you to perform a sign, something impressive, some miraculous thing, so that we will be able to judge you correctly." What it says is, Jesus sighed deeply in his spirit. I just want you to think of the occasion, what had happened. Then these religious leaders come and they demand a sign. And Jesus sighed deeply. I'm going to count to 3 and you give me your best take on what that sounded like. Jesus sighing deeply in his spirit. 8 o'clock service did real good at this, and you guys outnumber them considerably, so I expect big things. Okay. So on 3, your best sighing deep in your spirit, as you expect Jesus must have on this occasion. Ready? 1, 2, 3. All right, it's not bad. Not bad. I kind of think we need to get more into the spirit of the occasion. I had Scott to pick on in the 8 o'clock service, and he's not here now, so I've got to pick on somebody else. Where is Mark Overly out here? Where you go, Mark? Mark's not here. Okay. All right. I have to pick on someone else. See, this is more difficult than you think. All right, I'll pick on Dave. I'll pick on Dave for a minute. And Dave, I'll back you up to the years when I first knew you, and you were the minister at Hanoverton, right? So we're going back to that time, and we're talking at that time, and somebody from Hanoverton walks up to our conversation, and they say, "I think it's about time we had a Christian church in Hanoverton." And you would say, "Ha ha ha! What am I, chopped liver? I mean, and they would say, no, no, I mean a real Christian church. So you're the minister of the Christian church. You've been the minister of the Christian church for years. You labor and you live at the Christian church in Hanoverton. And somebody says, I think it's about time that we had a Christian church in this town. And maybe you would sigh deeply in your spirit. Okay, we add this layer to it. You ready? One, two, three. Okay. We're getting there. Sometime back, I spoke to a young man who had had several automobile accidents, all on his parents' dime, finished off a few different cars that belonged to his parents, and settled the things on insurance that was paid for by his parents. And in between accidents, he kept getting speeding tickets. And finally, he got a speeding ticket following an accident, and the officer said to him, look, you know, one more incident, and you're going to lose your license. And the young man said to me, that's when I learned my lesson. And I said, oh, so you slowed down. He said, no, I started taking the back roads. One, two, three. Okay, now. So we need a sign by which we can judge you. This is one of those few things that is recorded in all four Gospels. I've made a point of listing when we come across something. I mean, I know the big important things are in all four Gospels, but I mean, there are big differences. We were doing the Gospel of Mark, and Mark doesn't deal with the birth of Jesus Christ at all. Just doesn't do it. And there are lots of things, parables and miracles that appear in this Gospel or these two, but very few things like this appear in all four Gospels. But this demand from the Pharisees to see a sign after they have seen signs, this demand appears in all four Gospels. I believe this struck Jesus. The reason he sighed deeply in his spirit is this struck him as a big, hairy deal, an awful deficit, something that absolutely, positively had to be overcome for reasons that we will come to shortly. So we want to see a sign so we can judge you correctly. I've read a lot of different commentaries about what might have been acceptable to the Pharisees, since they have already seen Jesus feed multitudes with just a little tiny bit of food, and they have already seen Jesus heal people who were sick and make lame people walk, and they have already seen all these impressive things, but it wasn't enough. They needed something more. And some commentaries say, well, you know, they would object. Yes, you healed that guy, but you did it on the Sabbath, so that doesn't count. And you fed those people, but your disciples didn't wash their hands, so that doesn't count. We need a miracle that is subject to all of our rules and traditions so that it counts. Maybe some people think that when they said a sign from heaven, and I couldn't find anything beyond what a few commentators said. I couldn't find anything historical to settle my mind on this, but maybe they say that when they said a sign from heaven, they meant that he had to do something that was like the miracles in the Exodus, because that was the biggest, most important, miraculous period in their history. So what we need you to do is part some body of water, or bring down manna from heaven, or something like that. Something like what Moses did back in the days when they were real miracles. And if we saw that, then we would know how to judge you. And if that's so, I tell you, I thought back to it in the day of Moses, by the power of God, Moses did all those miracles. And you know, every time there was the least bit of hardship, what was the reaction of the people? We want to go back to Egypt. We want to elect a new leader to take your place. Or in the real pinch, we want to kill you! And then we'll elect a new leader to take your place. They saw all those miracles. And it created in them how much faith? I mean, how teeny. And I think the Pharisees show themselves to be the true descendants of the grumbling Israelites. They have seen and seen and seen. And whatever it was that was wrong with all those miracles they had already seen, if they had seen another, if Jesus had said, okay, try this one on for size and done something else just to satisfy them, how many of you believe that they would right then and there said, okay, we got it now, we're with you. Anybody? Anybody? I don't think so either. And apparently Jesus didn't think so either, because he said, what's with this generation and asking for always more signs? You're not going to get another one. So the incident passes by, and they get in the boat. And they're off across that lake again to go somewhere else and do some more teaching. And maybe perform some more really impressive signs that the Pharisees in that neighborhood won't appreciate either. But they're in the boat and they're going, and there develops this complication. Nobody brought any bread. Well, one loaf. Somebody had one loaf. But other than that, nobody. There were seven big baskets full just back there a minute ago. And nobody brought any bread. I think that there are perhaps several ways to imagine this conversation going, because Mark only gives us just the bare bones. But a way that I imagine it is that they are realizing that they have no bread, and there's a conversation going on about this. You did, Bartholomew, it was your turn. You forgot. I brought the bread last time. I'm pretty sure it was James's time to think about bread this time. Well, what are we going to eat? If there are 13 of us in this boat, and we got one lousy loaf of bread. And Jesus picks this moment to deliver a lesson that can kind of piggyback on their concerns, because it's bread. And he picks up this bread-related thing and says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of Herod. Now, leaven, ever since the whole Passover thing, when they had been ordered to clean their house of all the leaven and have only the unleavened bread, ever since then they had understood leaven in a metaphorical sense to represent evil. And it was a good metaphor, because the leaven, the yeast, finds its way through the whole loaf and changes the character of everything that it touches. So this is the way they hear it. Leaven is this pervasive, evil attitude that overtakes a person's entire being. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees and the Herod and the Herodians, and both of them have such self-interest, and Jesus is a threat to their self-interest, and they can't see past their self-interest. The Pharisees with their regulations and rules, and the Herodians with their political manipulations, they've got their program and they can't see past it to understand what it is that God is doing right now, right here, and what wonderful benefits they could reap from it if only they could get past their hang-ups and agendas and just open their eyes for a minute to the purposes of God. But no, their attitude condemns them and makes them unable to receive those things. So beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of Herod. Jesus gives them this lesson appropriate to their situation. And immediately they fall back into. See, even Jesus is mad because you forgot the bread. What's the matter with you? You didn't bring the bread. There's a time for sighing deeply in your spirit. And there's a time for saying, "Hey! What is the matter with you people? I know you have eyes and ears. I can see them. But you surely must be blind and deaf. Don't you remember when we fed the 5,000 people? Yes, we remember. How many loaves and fishes? Yes, we remember. How many baskets full of leftovers? Yes, we remember. And just 15 minutes ago, we fed the 4,000 people. How could we forget? It was just then. And yet, how many loaves? And how many baskets? Yes, we got it. And you think the problem is that we only have one loaf of bread for 13 people? You think that's a problem? You aren't bewaring the leaven of the Pharisees and of Herod nearly enough. If you can't see past this little tiny momentary difficulty, if you don't have enough faith to think that we can get through this, you see, it's bad enough when it's your opponents who can't look past their momentary hang-ups and agendas to pick up on the purposes of God. But what about when it's your closest associates laboring in the kingdom and they cannot look past the momentary difficulty? See the power of God, wisdom of God, the Son of God, who is right there in the same boat. Now let me ask you, how many of you believe that we need to beware the leaven of the Pharisees and of Herod? How many of you think that we often focus on the minors, the little difficulties, and miss the majors, the big work that God is doing? How many of you have been through small or great periods of trial in your life? Should be everybody. I mean, it's an easy one. We've all been through trial. How many of you have seen God lead you through and help you work out those trials? Once? Twice? Three times? Four? How many times does it take until you get it? I am in His hands. And He will lead me through the storm. I don't officially start preaching Christmas sermons until next week. But do you suppose that sometimes even Christmas time, we focus on the minors and miss the majors? What an astounding, wonderful, unimaginable work God did in the incarnation of Jesus Christ into flesh, and everything that it means to us. Sometimes lost, because in that whole big chain of lights, I can't track down the bulb that is shorting it out. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees and of Herod. Think back on everything God has done in the Bible, of course, but in your life. And open your eyes and minds and hearts to His purposes right now. Because it would be such a shame to miss them because we cannot see past our agendas or the difficulties of the moment.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.